Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sign up with MyBookie and use our promo code Gators to get your first ever deposit match dollar for dollar. Bet anything, anywhere, anytime. With my bookie. Get the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 at manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping when you use code GatorsBreak20.
Want more Gators Breakdown? Join Gators Breakdown Plus. Starting at $3 a month, get access to unique episodes, plus a blog, chat room, giveaways, shout-outs, and more. Gators Breakdown Plus is furthering the interaction with fans and listeners like you. Head to GatorsBreakdown.supportingcast.fm to join Gators Breakdown Plus today. Gators Breakdown. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Joining you for big game week, Alabama. The Crimson Tide rolling into Gainesville, 3:30 on Saturday. Let me break it all down, get our first little look at this game. Maybe not little look, Will. Maybe I used the wrong word there. This is our first look. We'll see how big it gets here, but plenty to discuss here as Alabama, number one team in the nation, rolls into Gainesville, joined by Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. Plenty there to go and follow Will, get his info, his website, Read and Reaction YouTube channel. I'm telling you, we got you covered, guys. You don't have to go anywhere else. But between Gators Breakdown and Read and Reaction, we come together every Monday here, getting you Gators coverage. This time, this week, Will, one big game to look forward to.
Yeah, man, we've been looking forward to this for more than a week, right? We've been looking forward to this all offseason. Mullen even said it today during the press conference that this is the way you measure yourself, that he doesn't really know, right, how his offensive and defensive lines stack up. And all, you know, last year, obviously, losing by 6 points in the SEC championship game, the question in every Florida fan's mind is, can Mullen take that next step? Can he beat a team like Alabama, which he hasn't done at Mississippi State? He hasn't done at Florida yet. And so, you know, being able to go and measure yourself is what this is all about, right? That's why you come to the SEC. It's why you come to the best conference in the world. And so Saturday, we all get to see it. And like I said, we've basically had this one penciled since about the end of the second quarter against Oklahoma. And and it's finally here.
You know it's a big game. Will's going to be in Gainesville, so you know it's a big game. Will doesn't get down too often, of course, last year and all the problems that it caused. But Will Miles will be in Gainesville. So everybody, you know, come say hello. First time, you know, Will and I have been together since
last Harmonic Woods tailgate, man, like yeah, 2 years ago, I think, Missouri. Yeah, back in 2018, I think it was the last time we were live. Yeah,
last time Will was in Gainesville, Florida lost. So you know, you gotta rub him on that one. You were in Gainesville twice that year, right?
I get down once or twice a year. I'd be honest, it all starts to sort of blur together. Though I think this one, I'll remember. I saw a highlight today of the deep of the bomb from Brantley to DeBose to open up the Alabama game a few years ago, or like a decade ago now. And I was at that one too. So it's always fun to sort of relive those memories on TV and the highlights after you've been down there for one of those.
Yeah, so we'll be in Gainesville. We'll all be down there Saturday having a good time. Tailgating and just Yeah. This week we can get into it. I know, and I said it on the chat this morning, the Twitter chat, and I put it out there. I know the damper has been put on this week just a little bit because of the team's putting up 600 yards of offense, and we're still finding things to critique about this team. Rightfully so. Doesn't mean everything's perfect out there, and we'll get into the quarterback talk and all that. And you know, 2 weeks ago, this game felt a little different. We get to game week, and not as confident out there. You know, some Gator fans not out there confident like they were a couple weeks ago. Now we get to the to game week, kind of subdued. But, you know, and as I said, you know, go be a fan this week. You never know what happened. You don't want to look back and say, oh, man, I wish I had went all out and talked all the trash I wanted to game week. And if you're one of those trolls on Twitter, go ahead and go troll. Like I said, go have fun with it. Be a fan this week because you don't want to look back and Florida does beat Alabama and regret that, oh, man, I didn't have the fun I wanted to have. Don't get me wrong. You can make up for it after the game. But have some fun leading up to the game, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what so the damper is really the Richardson injury to me is sort of the thing that puts a damper on things. But Mullen actually said he's planning on having him practice this week. So, you know, there's still an opportunity that he may be healthier than maybe we think. And you know, if we'd have beat the first two opponents 60-0, does it really change very much coming into this game? Right. Not really. And then I will say that the Alabama juggernaut felt real when they were just manhandling Miami. But then Miami went out and almost got beat by Appalachian State at home. And so, you know, I think there are some indicators that Alabama's maybe – definitely not last year's Alabama team.
Right.
But obviously this isn't last year's Florida team either. And the question is, do the matchups favor the Gators in certain instances? Are there things Mullen's going to be able to take advantage of? And that is one of the things that I think Mullen has proven is that over time, if he has an advantage somewhere, he's going to be able to find it. The problem is when he was at Mississippi State, he never had enough advantages to actually put stuff together to really beat Alabama or LSU or even Auburn, for that matter, all that often. And at Florida, he's been able to do that for the most part, though obviously against some of these big boys, he struggled. So this is the first step, right? And the thing is that win or lose, Florida's still alive in the East, and all you got to do is win the East to have the rematch. But obviously sort of understanding where the team sits, and that was sort of, I think, the theme today of Mullen's press conference is, you know, this is a way to measure yourself. And I'm excited to see how Florida measures up. I mean, even if Florida loses by 4 touchdowns, we know. And at that point, then it's a question of, you know, how do you measure up to Georgia? How do you measure up to LSU? That sort of stuff. You lose by 3 and you go, okay, this team has a real shot against everybody else on the schedule, including Georgia. And if you win the game, then obviously you walk out of it and talk as much trash as you possibly can. So I don't know why, like, I'm just as excited for it as anybody. Maybe it's because I'm getting on a plane on Friday to find my way down there. But, you know, the reality is we only get 12 or 13 of these every year. Last year, we didn't even get that. So, you know, enjoy every one, even the ones against cupcakes like FAU and USF. And then when you get one of these big ones, savor it, because it's not that often you get a matchup with the number one team in your own home stadium and when both teams are undefeated, where if you're able to pull out the win, I mean, Florida's 12th right now, but if Florida wins this, I mean, what, second, third? I mean, where do you end up if you pull out the win? I think you end up really high up in that top 5. You know, especially if it ends up being a convincing win. And, you know, I think there's some reasons for optimism that Florida's going to be able to keep this close. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yep, we'll get into it there. Even some more about the whole measuring stick thing. Kind of go back to a theme that I went back to in spring and stuff. And kind of when the schedule was released, looking at the schedule, when this game was going to be played, all that stuff there. But everybody, Gators Breakdown Plus, man, another avenue there. We're talking about content coming left and right. Another avenue of it right there. A lot of new members out there in the last few days, so thank you so much for joining that. Want even more content, instant reactions after the games, Q&A session that is just for Gators Breakdown Plus members during the week. That'll be out there as well every Thursday. So it's been a lot of fun the last 2 weeks doing that too. So Gators Breakdown Plus, where it's at for some more Gators Breakdown content. You mentioned it. Mullen says, you know, good measuring stick for this team. And look, he even went on to say, you know, at this point in the season, not necessarily, you know, a measuring stick just in general, but I'm going to say and go back to a point I went back to in the spring and maybe even after the Alabama game last year was 2020 was going to show you how close those teams were to each other. And it was pretty close. If Florida was going to play their best, Alabama plays really good and near one of their best. You know, those two teams were 6 points apart that day. And of course, the seasons were very different when you look at it and how they ended for both teams. But I looked at this game in 2021 and said, well, you know, now you get Alabama 2 years in a row, and it's a measuring stick for the program in a way as well. You know, not just for the team. You get the team 2 years in a row now. You get Alabama. They lose a lot of talent, just like you did, just like Florida lost Kyle Trask and Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts. They lose receivers and quarterbacks and Heisman finalists and all that good stuff, just like Florida. Well, you know, now you get them with those scenarios laid out, and now you get them in the swamp 2 years in a row. And this is kind of now where your Dan Mullen's in his fourth year. This is his recruited team. This is his recruited quarterback. You know, this can be, you know, last year you were comparing teams. You were comparing, to me, 2020 teams. You can kind of compare programs right now where Dan Mullen's at in his fourth year. Look, we know, win or lose, you're not Alabama. You're not the stature of Alabama. You can go out there, it's going to be considered an upset. And looking at the grand scheme of things, even if Florida wins, you're not replacing Alabama by any means or any stretch of the imagination. But 6 points last year, go into this game, find a way to upset, find a way to play them tough, at least after week three, the game after Alabama, it could tell you a lot about the program and program direction under Dan Mullen by maybe shrinking the gap towards Alabama a little bit. Gap still large in some ways, but you go play them close in 2020, close loss or a win in 2021, you know, you can start comparing programs in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, obviously, Florida loses its three best offensive players from last year. If they can go out and they can play a completely different kind of offense and still be able to move the ball against the Tide, I think that says something about Mullen's offensive acumen. I think it says something about his ability to develop players. You know, last year's game, everybody says 6 points. That game wasn't really that close. I mean, it was 35-17 at the half. Najee Harris goes in at the half. And obviously, I think we held out hope that Florida would be able to come back, and very pleased with the way they fought there in the second half, as opposed to just sort of falling apart. At the same time, you know, it scoring a touchdown there with a minute or two left, and then not having the timeouts to actually stop the clock at the end of the day, that game was a little bit more than a 6 point win. But you know, the other thing is that you talk about the three offensive players that Florida lost. Well, look at the offensive players that Alabama lost. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I do think that's important here is that Florida is averaging 8.5 yards per rush. That's the third best in all the country when it comes to running the ball. And if you think about ways to slow down Alabama's offense, ways to give your defense a rest, ways to sort of just grind down the opposition to a point where you can start hitting some of those big plays, I mean, keeping the ball on the ground is a big part of that. And so, yes, Anthony Richardson's a big part of that, and we'll see whether he's able to contribute. At the same time, Emory Jones is a big part of that, being in there in the running game. And so, you know, if they can continue to average 8.5 yards a rush, they're going to have an opportunity to win. So really, that battle up front between the defensive line of Alabama and the offensive line of Florida, and whether Florida is able to continue and maintain its ability to run the ball and hit big explosive plays in the run game, is just a different question than we had last year. Because last year it was, you know, is Kadarius Toney going to be able to take on cornerbacks on the outside? Is Kyle Pitts going to be able to do to Alabama what he did to everybody else? And is Kyle Trask going to get time to be able to throw? It's just a completely different set of questions this year.
Yeah, and I think you and I both, in our own avenues at Read and Reaction and Gators Breakdown, we'll have the preview later this week of like how we expect Florida to attack and go about this game. And you're right, Will, the run game is going to be instrumental for this Gator offense and the Gator offensive attack slowing down Alabama just a little bit too. But yeah, measuring stick it is. You know, of course, you know, you still win or lose, you have 9 more games to go play. So it is a measuring stick for week three and week three only. You can't go out there and what Ole Miss in 2015 – beats Alabama, comes to the swamp the very next week, and gets their brains beat in by Will Grier in Florida. So you can see what happens with a victory over Alabama. You got to keep it going, got to keep the streak of feeling good about yourself. You know, you can't falter, and you can't let a loss deflate you either. You got to be able to bounce back and continue the season mentally as well. We did find out that the Florida-Tennessee game, Will, the very next week in the swamp as well, will be a 7 p.m. kickoff. There. So Alabama 3:30 this week and Tennessee next week at Under the Lights in the Swamp, 7 p.m. So yeah, good talk there about the measuring stick and seeing where you are and comparing to Alabama in a couple ways. Will, you mentioned it there, AR, Anthony Richardson, plenty of quarterback talk well, of course, to get into. It's just the never a dull moment. And, of course, the Gators quarterback talk is very, very rare that it's dull in that regard, too. Mullen says Anthony Richardson will go through treatment this week and will practice. Quote, we'll see where he is Saturday. And we go, Will. So maybe, you know, a strain, not a tear. Be on the field. We'll see pain tolerance. We'll see healing time. All that. You know, look, you're probably not running your quarterback a whole lot in practice anyway. But that is part of his game. That's what we have seen. It is, you know, going to affect him if he's not 100% out there going against Alabama. So, of course, the question, Will, is to play or not to play. And we won't know that. We won't know a percentage of how healthy he is, how healthy he is not, how close to 100% he is. If he can safely play and effectively play, I want him out there. And of course, that's an obvious answer, given what we've seen the first couple games. But, you know, I have seen that thought out there. Well, the chances of beating Alabama aren't high anyway. Don't want him to lose his confidence. Don't want him to get hurt or whatever. If he can play, go play him. I mean, look, the goal, win or lose, is to get to Atlanta after Saturday. That is the goal. And even with a loss, you may see Alabama again. You never know. Anthony Richardson's going to me, he's going to need those reps. I don't want if and I look, I know I'm looking ahead. It's a big potential. Everything would have to go right after a loss to Alabama if he's in there. I want him to get the experience there. You don't want Atlanta to be a surprise if you're to play Alabama again in Atlanta. You don't want that defense, the speed to be a surprise. If Anthony Richardson can play Saturday, first of all, it helps the Gators win the game. Second of all, if you see Alabama again, he's going to have some experience against that defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is he compromised, right? I mean, because you can't put him out there if he's compromised, if he's going to injure himself further. But if it's just he sort of tweaked it and he thinks he can go and the doctors don't think it's going to get any worse if he goes out there and plays, obviously he's been the most effective offensive weapon that Florida's had this year for an offense that's really been quite elite other than its ability to convert in the red zone when they've gotten down there and Richardson's helmet's popped off. And so, you know, I mean,
can we get a new helmet, by the way, can we get a new chin strap? Can we get some duct tape? Let's get, you know, can we keep that going?
Seriously. So, I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy whose fifth longest play was 18 yards, but he's had plays of 80, 75, 41, 36, and 18. Five explosive plays, you know, three passes, two runs. They were, you know, three of those turned into touchdowns. And then you have the ridiculous 36-yarder where he threw it sort of going the wrong direction. But, I mean, the interesting thing
is that might be the most impressive play.
Well, so it's actually – so I think it's impressive because it required him to know that he was going to have one-on-one coverage with Copeland, but that he needed to give Copeland time to get open. And so him dancing around back there was purposeful. He was trying to give his receiver time to allow that route to develop because Copeland's not even looking until he makes the break on the actual route. And so he had to buy time, but he knew he had one-on-one coverage based on the way the safeties were aligned to start the play. And I think that's something that you look at and say, okay, he knew where to go with the ball. He knows he's got one-on-one coverage. Yeah, he made an awesome throw, but even if the throw had been a little bit off, because he had one-on-one, he was going to give Copeland an opportunity to jump up and get it. It's the same thing a couple of weeks ago. He didn't make a perfect throw on the throw to Jamarcus Weston where he sort of got behind defense on the defense on fourth and four, but he was able to find the guy who was in one-on-one coverage, find the guy come open in between the zones, and then be able to hit him there, even though it wasn't a perfect throw. And I think we've sort of seen that with him thus far. It is interesting, though. Mullen mentioned the play specifically against FAU where Richardson didn't make the right read. And that one immediately jumps to mind too, because you could see it almost immediately when it happens. FAU brought a corner blitz. He didn't adjust his coverage, even though he probably should have seen the blitz beforehand. And then once the blitz came, he didn't throw it to his hot guy either. He just basically, you know, deked the guy out of his shoes, ran around. It went for like a 25-yard gain and everybody got excited. Whether or not he has the ability just, you know, when he's completely healthy to do that against a team like Alabama, and then whether or not he has the ability to do that with a hamstring that's not 100% against Alabama are sort of the questions I think we're going to be asking, because he's going to make mistakes. He's a freshman, right? Or a redshirt freshman. So he's going to make some mistakes. The question is going to be, can you live with those mistakes? And, you know, here's the reality. If you're putting up three plays over 40 yards every game, you're going to live with a guy who misses a read every once in a while.
There you go. And that was one of the next points I was going to, Will. The good outweighing the bad, and that kind of goes into Emory Jones' play as well. And, you know, it's, you know, look, AR may be making mistakes. His mistakes aren't turnovers. His mistakes aren't giving the other team the ball. That's the difference for me. Right now, we can get into it. You know, Emery playing better than he was in week one, week two, first half, playing good. And, of course, maybe I doomed it. I tweeted out, oh, yeah, the timing's there. Emery's making good decisions. Literally, Will. It wasn't a minute later. There's the first pick, and the avalanche falls there. So they were saying it on the broadcast, too. Hey, he looks much better the first half. He's in sync. You know, he's making better decisions in the run game, not only the passing game. It's there. The timing's there this week, more so than it was last week. And then it falls apart there for Emory Jones in the second half. One more thing about AR, Will, before we move on to Emory a little bit. You know, the part we should all watch for here and looking out for this week, and maybe even the game itself, and maybe this factors into the coach's decision. This is a history of a hamstring injury for AR. And I was talking on Gators Breakdown Plus, and I put it in the chat there. I was like, look, I'm pretty sure this isn't a new injury. So I started asking around, and I know Casey, he ended up confirming it as well, but this dates back to the spring when it was pretty bad in spring, a couple times in fall where it kind of maybe flared up, nothing serious, maybe kind of what he's dealing with right now. You know, he was able to go these first couple games for the most part until that happened. So the worry now is it's just a nagging injury, and now you had the time off from spring to summer workouts and, you know, fall camp starting. Really the only thing that's going to help this thing is rest. Don't have that luxury right now. Rest is not really an option if you can go out there and play, or, you know, you just take a cut, or play him for this game, you know, and the other side of it, if people, you know, basically saying don't throw AR out there because of confidence. If he's not healthy, absolutely, it's an easy decision. But if he's able to play, that injury, if that hammy's not hurting, if he can handle the pain, if it is there, of course, you don't want to go out there and make it worse and you miss the rest of the season. I think that's the worry some people have. So this history of this nagging hamstring, kind of just wait and see throughout the season as well, not only for the Alabama game, but throughout the season too.
Yeah, so there's a couple things there. One is that I have zero worries about his confidence level.
Yeah.
Because you don't purposefully change your number to number 15 at the University of Florida without knowing what you're doing and having the stones to think you can back it up. Again. So the idea that he's going to get spooked by Alabama if he goes out there and has a bad game, to me, is not really relevant. That, you know, the guy has purposefully said, I'm going to take all the expectations you guys have, and I'm going to put them right there on the front of my jersey and on the back of my jersey, because the expectations that come with the number 15 at the University of Florida are significant. He knew it, and he decided to do it anyway. Now, obviously, it helps with NIL that his initials are AR, so AR-15 makes a lot of sense. At the same time, you know, he knows the expectations. He knew what he was doing when he did that. The fact that he's willing to do it tells me that confidence is not going to be an issue. And to be honest, seeing him chuck the ball around, the confidence isn't going to be an issue either. The hamstring injury is a great point, though, that those things, even if it's not a recurring thing with a particular player, that hamstring injuries tend to be things that take a while to get over. You think about James Harden with the Nets this year, you know, tweaks his hamstring. They think he's going to be back in like the first round of the playoffs, and all of a sudden he's sort of like floating around in the third round against the Bucks, and really can't give the Nets what they need in that particular series, because he tried to go a little bit earlier, tweaked it again, and then wasn't able to go. Obviously, football is different than basketball, but at the same time, you can get those things that become nagging injuries over time, and hamstrings tend to be one of those things. So, I mean, if Florida decided that they weren't going to play Richardson in this game because they need to make sure they can evaluate him for the rest of the season, I think that's probably an okay reason to let him sit. But if it's confidence that's keeping – if you're worried about his confidence, I think that's a stupid reason to let him sit. The guy has plenty of confidence and has plenty of reason to have confidence, and I don't think a bad game against Alabama is going to deplete that at all. Though, again, if you're worried about him having a bad game against Alabama, I think you're worried about some stuff that he hasn't shown any sort of reason to have that worry, right? I mean, look, he's going to turn busted plays into 20-yard runs. He's going to throw to the right guy when everything goes right with the checks to the line of scrimmage. Is he going to screw up a few of those things? Sure, but he might turn them into a 50-yard run when he does. So,
all about balance for me, Will. Good and bad. Even good and bad for him. I think the good will outweigh the bad. And compared to the other quarterback on the roster too, I think the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, right? I think all along – I think you and I both suspected they were going to need both of these guys. And one of the reasons they were going to need both of these guys is that when you run the quarterback, you know, 15 times a game, you're going to sustain injuries over the course of the year. And so we've sustained the first one. Unfortunately, it happens right before the Alabama game, and we'll see what AR has left. But the good news is that Emory Jones has played quite a bit the last two games, and so he's going to be prepared to go into this game against Alabama. And he did some nice things last week, like you mentioned, especially in the first half. There were some things you could see. Was it anywhere close to what Anthony Richardson did? Nah, not even close, right? But at the same time, he did do some nice things. We saw some progression from week one to week two, and that's what we hope to see, right? Progression from week two to week three when they play Alabama, eliminate some of those major mistakes and sort of start there.
There you go. If you can eliminate the major mistakes, and if this run game is anywhere close, and look, it's not going to be. It's Alabama. But if it can resemble some of the things that we saw the first couple of weeks, you're going to build a game plan. You're going to build a game plan this week. The game plan this past couple of weeks, you know, all right, let's go see what we do well. Let's go see what we don't do well. Just don't turn the ball over. Okay, well, you did that. And that's part of the problem there. But not much game planning going on like there is going to be for Alabama. You know, there'll be wrinkles. There'll be plays. There'll be but a game plan to me built around the run game. Try and limit some of these mistakes by Emory Jones. Give him some easy reads. And look, the thing that's going to help him the most is Florida, that run game to look a little bit like it has the first couple weeks. Yeah, I think Florida's going to try it. I think they should try it. I think that's the strong part of the offense. That's what we knew about the offense coming into this season. That's what we have seen from this offense the first couple of weeks. And the explosion has been better from the running backs. A lot of the explosion has, of course, come from Anthony Richardson, but more explosive runs from the running backs too. Offensive line helping out is there. Chain reaction will for me. You know, that's going to help Emory Jones there. And a game plan now built around some of the things. I mean, look, there's going to be risk that's going to have to be taken in this game at some point, in some form or fashion. But at least now, Mullen knows, going through spring, going through fall camp, now going through these first couple games, he knows what Emory Jones does well, what Emory Jones does not do well. Now you go build a game plan around it, and hopefully will. I mean, it's going to be limited somewhat unless, you know, Emory Jones has just comes out and for whatever reason, plays better versus Alabama than he did versus FAU and USF. But going to be dependent there. But look, we knew. I mean, before the season, even game three, even if AR doesn't come up limping with a hammy just a little bit, good chance this game was still going to come down to somewhat of what Emory Jones can do. So a better performance to start with last week. Couldn't keep it going. Now, hopefully – no, I just with the AR injury, he's going to be a huge factor in this game. Hopefully he steps up to the plate.
Yeah, and I think Mullen maybe over the last couple of games has given him some different things to do and probably has a little bit better idea of the things he can ask of him and the things that he can't ask of him. And so one of the things you saw with Mullen with Nick Fitzgerald, especially in his first year as a starter, is he would do some things to really simplify the read for Fitzgerald. So he would spread his wide receivers way out by the numbers, and then they would run a read option with sort of an RPO option attached to it where he could dump it to the tight end. And it really just meant that all he had to do was read the defensive end and he knew what to do. And I think you're going to see some of that sort of stuff pop up against Alabama, particularly in key times, right? So a third and four where Florida's sort of getting deep, maybe they're sort of at the edge of field goal range and they need a first down. Those are the times where those sorts of things are going to come out. I think Mullen will have three or four of those plays where he tries to design it to where the read is pretty simple, where he's not necessarily trying to throw in between zones or where he's not trying to figure out, oh, I've got man on this side. It's just now we're going to set the formation to the point where the only thing that the defense is going to be able to do is play this one way, and you're going to be prepared no matter what they do. There's going to be an answer. I think there will probably be three or four of those. And then the other thing is that he talked about before the first game, Mullen did, about that with quarterbacks like Emory Jones or like Anthony Richardson, sometimes the second read is to run. And, you know, I think in the first couple of games, we've seen Emory Jones sort of wait and wait and wait and wait, waiting for guys to come open. And I do wonder whether the emphasis in practice this week is going to be, if your first guy isn't open and you don't have the throw right away, go. And you wouldn't have wanted to do that against FAU. You wouldn't have wanted to do that against USF. But against Alabama, I think you might want to do that, where you just basically say, look, you got one read or two reads. Look to your check down. If he's not open, go. and run. And if we gain 3 yards, cool. And maybe end up with 26 rushes by the end of the year. But you're going to bank, you're going to hit a couple of those things where you gash the defense for 14, 15, 16 yards. And it's going to be a big gain for us, put us in scoring position, get us being able to move the ball down the field. And I really think that's going to be sort of the difference is, or what I'm looking for when I look for what Mullen's going to be doing in this game is, how does he scheme things to take advantage of the things that Emory Jones does well? And how does he avoid putting him in situations where he has to do things that he doesn't do well? And part of that is just going to be coaching him to not necessarily wait and wait. It's going to be, we have to make a decision. We have to make a decision now. And we saw that the decision time sped up between game one to game two. It wasn't where we want it to be in game two. But I think if it speeds up from game two to game three, and he was definitely more decisive in the running game in game two against USF. And so if he can become even more decisive in that part of the game, I think there's an opportunity, even without Anthony Richardson, for Florida to be able to move the ball against this Alabama defense.
Yeah, maybe a little more of those keepers, a little more of an option game coming in for Florida as far as game plan goes. And I'm glad you brought up, the one read, two read, and run. Look, kind of dating back, and maybe at the time it sounded like making an excuse for Emory, and probably now probably some truth to that when we heard about all the issues of accuracy and timing and anticipation, lack of anticipation of, okay, well, he's just putting, Mullen's not running these quarterbacks in a scrimmage. You want to see what they can do with their arm. I'm glad you said that. Probably bled over into practice a little bit the first couple of weeks as well. Probably bled over into these first couple of games as well of going longer through your reads instead of taking off and running. Now, of course, game three, we do want to see it versus Alabama. And if you're going to take off and run, we want to see you use your legs more so than we saw the first couple of weeks. I do think that part has been a little more conservative as far as Emory Jones' games. I do expect him to use his legs more coming up versus Alabama, and whether it be design runs, whether it be scrambles on a broken pass play, or whether it be a simple RPO and you have the chance to go run after one read and it's not there. Okay, and a lot of that comes into play calling too for Dan Mullen, setting up very likely scenarios, very easy scenarios, very friendly scenarios for Emory Jones. I think that comes into play too is, look, yeah, you're going to come up with a game plan, but will the play calling better be on point too?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's always the case, right? I mean, Hopefully everybody's got the right wristbands and we're ready to go. But, at the end of the day, like Emory Jones, there's going to be a time in this game where he has to make a play.
Yep.
And that really is going to be probably the difference in this game. I mean, obviously there are some scenarios where Alabama comes and just blows the tires off of Florida, but I think that's probably unlikely. I think what we're probably going to see is something that is, I think we're going to see something that's similar to what we saw in the LSU game last year, where it's frustrating because the Florida defense can't really stop them and can't get off the field, but the Florida offense is still going to be able to move the ball and going to be able to keep the Gators in the game. And so if they're able to convert in the red zone, if they're able to put 7 up when they get down there, I can envision a scenario where this is going to be really close, late third quarter, early fourth quarter. It's going to come down to Emory Jones being able to make the throw, because Saban's going to give him some of those intermediate throws. He's going to give him probably some cover two, where you look at it and say, you got to hit tight windows in between zones, but you got to also throw it on time. Is he going to be able to do that when it really comes down to it? You got to do it. I mean, that's one of the challenges. But around that is going to be Mullen putting him in situations where he's able to take advantage of his athleticism. You saw it a little bit in the game against USF. They started doing sort of those like half boots where he was getting the ball quick to the wide receivers on the little out routes.
His first completion to Wills was the sprinting out to the right.
And I think, one, it's clear that he does that pretty well. And two, you can even look back in his high school film and see him doing that sort of thing. And then the other thing is that getting him on the move, I think, makes it a half-field read.
Yep.
And since it's a half-field read, you can be decisive and you can get the ball out rather than having to worry about going all the way across. I mean, the reality is, and I think Mullen even said this before the first game, that to expect Emory Jones to be reading the defense and then making accurate throws like Kyle Trask is an unfair expectation. Just like asking Kyle Trask to run for 200 yards or 150 yards in his first two starts last year would have been an unfair thing. And so the passing was so bad in the first game for Jones that it sort of offset the fact that he averaged 7.4 yards per rush and rushed for 74 yards total. He rushed for 81 against USF. And so lost in the 160 and 115 from Anthony Richardson is that Emory Jones was a really effective runner as well. The difference is he only averaged 4.2 yards per throw in the first game. He averaged 6.9 in the second. So again, pales in comparison to the 51 that Anthony Richardson averaged on his three. But if he can average 7 yards a throw but 6 yards a rush, Florida's going to be effective at moving the ball. And that's the reality, is that, you know, the running portion of this for Emory Jones is probably a bigger deal than the passing part of it, until it comes down to, you know, when the screws really start to tighten late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter. There's going to be a time where a big throw has to be made, and we'll see whether he's able to make it. And that'll be the difference, right? I mean, when you look at whether Florida's able to get over the hump, it'll probably be, you know, does it end up right in the arms of an Alabama defender and go the other way? Or does he hit somebody right on the sideline, right in the hands, over a corner and under a safety, and put Florida in field goal range, or drive them down, or, you know, does that set them up to drive down for a touchdown? I think you can clearly envision that might be a scenario where, you know, Emory Jones is either going to make or break his sort of his relationship with the fans when one of those things comes up against Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama dealing with some injuries at linebacker too. So, you know, we saw Dan Mullen be able to take advantage of a Georgia defense that was nursing some injuries last year. You know, maybe now Dan Mullen can see something, take advantage of an Alabama defense as well. Of course, guys, I know, completely different offense, all that. You don't have to tell me that, but there is something to look out for when you're looking at this game.
So I actually do think that's worth noting. Saban was uncharacteristically critical, I think, for this early in the season, but I think he has reason to be. When you go back and look at it, his team's giving up 6.9 yards per attempt. They gave up, I think, 9 yards per attempt to Mercer this past weekend. So, you know, my yards above replacement metric, I have them third worst in the SEC, two spots behind Florida on defense. So, you know, again, I start looking at it and I say, this is not invincible Alabama from 2020. I think there are some ways that you're going to be able to move the ball against the Tide. Obviously, you know, it's just two games in, and if Florida comes out and plays like Miami did in the opener, then, you know, then all bets are off and Alabama might run away with it. At the same time, I think that there are some holes in the Alabama defense that Florida might be able to take advantage of. And Saban is criticizing them for good reason, not just because he's trying to motivate them and he's kind of upset they kind of faded in the game against Mercer. You know, the interesting thing is that score against Mercer was aided by a blocked punt that got returned for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And the score against Mercer, if Florida had had that score against Mercer, we would be endlessly complaining that we didn't, you know, put the screw, you know, that we didn't tighten down and just blow them out in the fourth quarter, that how could you give up 14 points, like all that sort of stuff. And so the things we've heard about the FAU game and the USF game, I think, is sort of the same thing that Saban is kind of pointing to when it comes to Alabama, particularly against Mercer this past week.
Yep. All right. So like I said, well, plenty of talk there, Alabama talk coming, previews in the day ahead at Read and Reaction here on Gators Breakdown. But plenty more to get into. Mullen talking to the media today. Plenty of other news and notes to get into as well. If we move on from the – if we can move on from quarterback talk, Will, I guess, you know, if it's okay. But we know, nature of the beast when you're talking about Florida and what's transpired the first couple of weeks here. Before we do, remember, I mean, you got to head to MyBookie. The NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie with over $500,000 in contest prize money. Winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to MyBookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs. Highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. You pick 5 games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week 1, don't even sweat it, because entries are still open, and all it takes is one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't take my word for it. Join now. Start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get started, make your first deposit at MyBookie.ag and use promo code Gators to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code Gators. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. And autumn is in the air. The pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall. with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new fourth generation performance package. Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with code GatorsBreak20. Time to bundle up with the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. Inside the package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker, Ear and Nose Trimmer, Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver, Toner, Performance Boxer Briefs, and a travel bag for all those goodies. First off, you get that performance pack in the Performance Package 4.0. You get the Lawnmower 4.0, that fourth generation trimmer, reduce your grooming accidents with the advanced skin safe technology. You get that LED spotlight for more precise shave. Plus, it's waterproof. Also, in the Performance Package 4.0, you get the Weed Whacker. Best nose trimmer I've tried. Pretty much the only one I've ever tried that works. You got to give that thing a try. Get the liquid formulations, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the Crop Reviver, soothing spray for below the waist for high friction areas. Keep them cool, calm, protected after a good shave. And Manscaped even throws in two free gifts in the Performance Package 4.0. The Manscaped Boxer and Shed Travel Bag. Get comfy at home and on the go this season. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code GatorsBreak20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code GatorsBreak20 at manscaped.com. All right, Will, so something we've kind of spoken about, Dan Mullen even more in the press conference, did quote say, we have kept it pretty simple the first 2 weeks as far as utilizing the personnel. I mean, that's, you know, you can tell. I mean, first of all, you know, if they wanted to run the ball more, they could have. I think they've wanted to work on the passing game. A lot for me on this one, you know, it really goes to defense. Defense, we've seen the starters play the first half. Halftime comes, both games versus FAU and USF. You haven't seen the starters a whole lot on the field. Mullen says more veterans will be getting the reps compared to the two previous games with Alabama coming up, with SEC coming up. I mean, it really has been pretty simple the first couple of weeks. That doesn't excuse some of the execution we've seen. You'd like to see some short yardage situations to get your offensive line, get more push, but all in all, a good performance by them. You don't want to see Emory Jones throwing these interceptions, no matter how simple they have kept it. But it is pretty – and look, you're not emptying the kitchen sink versus FAU and USF. You better this week. You know, everything better be on full display. All the personnel packages you want to throw out there better be on display versus Alabama. But – doesn't take a rocket scientist to know, you know, they're not game planning. They're not throwing all their heavy personnel packages. There's going to be some wrinkles. There's going to be some new plays. Look, your offense is going to be basically the same. There's not going to be much that surprises Nick Saban coming from Dan Mullen. But with the shift in offense going to the run heavy, there's some wrinkles. There's some plays that they've worked on this offseason that we should see on Saturday. So hearing Dan Mullen say, you know, they kept it pretty simple the first 2 weeks. First of all, no surprise. And second of all, you'll see more of it this week.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is you don't have to fool Nick Saban. You got to fool Nick Saban's safeties. And so those guys are watching film, and those guys are preparing, and those guys are looking and saying, yeah, I don't know what to expect. It's actually one of the reasons I was a little bit surprised they had the rocker play against USF last week with Anthony Richardson. I kind of figured that would be something they might hold. It's not that no one's ever seen it before. It's that no one's seen it from Richardson. And so you're sitting there saying, is he capable of doing it? And now you know he is, and so you'll be able to prepare for it. The question I have is, what do you build off of that, right? And that's sort of the thing, is you've probably shown on film what you wanted to show on film, and yep. what is the zag you're going to attach to the zig that you showed against USF or against FAU on film. And then, you know, there are certain tendencies as well that you've probably, you know, there are some things about each of these quarterbacks in terms of where they like throwing and what they like doing. And have you been purposefully shying away from those sorts of things because you know you're going to come to that in this particular game? We'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, Alabama has outstanding athletes. They're going to be able to recover. You're going to need to make quick decisions. You're going to need to be able to get the ball out there quickly. And then you're going to need to win a few battles in space, irrespective of what the game plan is. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a surprise that Mullen would say they've sort of kept things simple. The other thing is that they've sort of kept everybody fresh, right? So the five running backs have all gotten, you know, 5 to 7 carries a game. At some point, they're going to say, hey, we're going to ride with the guy who's doing the best job out there. You know, the first game, it was Malik Davis. The last game, it was Damian Pierce. Though after the first drive, Pierce really didn't see the ball all that much. So I do think that one of the things they'll do is find the guy who's really got either the hot hand or has shown that he's finally been able to grasp the offense completely when it comes to a guy like DeMarcus Bowman or Lorenzo Lingard, get them out there in space and see what they can do in a way that they have not done yet in the first couple of games.
That's one thing, Will, I am definitely looking for is that running back rotation, seeing how it plays out. You mentioned how it played out the first couple of weeks there. You know, Mullen and saying, you know, the veterans will be getting most of the reps. I took that as, you know, most of the guys who have been starting out there, you know, your Zachary Carters, your Moons. I took that more for defense. You know, offense, I mean, it's been pretty set. You know, besides running back, I mean, you pretty much know who the veterans are. The veterans are going to play. The veterans should be the starters. Along offense, you can name, I mean, besides Emery and AR, of course, you know, you got your veterans at wide receiver that should be starting, your veterans at tight end that should be starting. Running back, I know a lot of people want to question how it goes there, but I like what I've seen so far from Damian Pierce and Malik Davis these first couple of weeks. Offensive line, you better go with the veterans because there's not much behind the 5-6 guys we've seen there. So, you know, when he says that, I take it as guys who've played a lot, guys who, to me, so far have proven this year to be the better players on the field, your Carters, your Moons. Vogel's been around the program now. Like, he's not starting, but, you know, I think he should be pushing for more playing time. You know, I just took it as a lot of those guys we've seen on defense in the second half, when I saw a lot of people saying they had to go look for a roster and see who a certain number was. And, oh, man, that guy has a hyphenated name. I don't even know who that was. I didn't know we had a hyphenated guy on defense. So, I mean, it's more about who, what the starting 11 you're going to see on both sides of the ball. You know, they sprinkled in some pieces here and there, or wholesale changes on defense, or wholesale changes on offense. You know, when you see 11 on defense, coming up now in SEC play, it's not going to be those 11 guys you saw in the second half. It's going to be two or three of those guys on the field with the rest of the starters. Same for offense. You know, I mean, we've seen the personnel packages and the mass substitutions that they do in offense sometimes. I think we'll start seeing that more versus Alabama there too. But I wouldn't take that quote too hard about, you know, taking it to heart too much about says more veterans will be getting the reps compared to the previous two games. I mostly took that as who's been starting the last couple games. Those guys are going to be out there. They've earned the reps. They've earned the playing time. Now we'll go see how they can do for a whole game instead of getting up. We don't need you out there anymore. We need to keep you healthy. Now it's go time, Will. It's go time.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 2 years since we've had cupcake games, so I think we kind of forgot that when you don't start off the season with Ole Miss and Texas A&M, you actually, like, get young players in there and give them some reps. I mean, the whole point, you get up 35-3, why not, right? And in fact, the biggest thing you wanted to do at that point was get out of the game without an injury or a severe injury. That's one of the things that was so disappointing about Richardson pulling up at the end of that touchdown is it was great to see him in there and go for that touchdown. And I was sort of laughing in terms of just this guy's ridiculous as he was running there. And then it was like, oh, no, please be a cramp. Yeah, obviously rosters tighten as you get into SEC play, sort of by necessity because you could dress less people when it comes to the SEC games. But also just, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, you got to put the guys out there who are earning those reps. And that's what we're going to see, hopefully, is the guys who've earned the reps are going to be out there. And you'll have a few backups who come in to give them a blow. And you'll have the general rotation on the defensive line. But at the end of the day, you're not going to look at the end of the third quarter and not see Zach Carter out there and not see Brenton Cox out there and not see Chris Bogle out there or Jeremiah Moon or Diabate. Like, those guys are going to be out on the field and going to be out on the field a lot. And thankfully, they've been able to get through the first two games without serious injuries, except maybe to Ventrell Miller. We'll see what happens there. But at the end of the day, yeah, the guys who've earned the time, who've put in the work, who were big parts of the team last year, particularly when you think about the defensive side of the ball, are going to get that consistent playing time. And, you know, the concern would be sort of that 15-play drive that happened in the first quarter against USF against those starters, not necessarily the couple of drives at the end of the game when they had to go 25 yards because, you know, there was a big kickoff return or a big punt return or an interception that sort of put them in high-level scoring position.
All right, let's move on and Mullen meeting with the media on Monday. Some highlights taken from that here. Mullen said, now this is the question I asked him about. Well, I wanted to, you know, look, I knew it was going to be dominated by quarterback questions there. So I did want to go a different way and ask him about two of the guys I've just been impressed with so far on the defensive side of the ball. Mullen saying Jeremiah, I asked him about Jeremiah Moon and Jadarius Perkins. There's two guys I've been impressed with, especially Moon these first couple games. Under the injury healthy, he seems like he's been at Florida for a decade now. Hopefully he can stay healthy. But, you know, he did say Jeremiah Moon being able to play that inside linebacker really helps the flexibility of the defense. And says Perkins has picked up the system fast. He can play corner or star, and he's worked hard to learn the defense. He's doing a good job making plays. Will we go back to game one, and it was Travis Johnson on the depth chart being the first team star. Started the game that way too, but it's been Perkins the first couple games that's really caught my eye there at star for his aggressive play, his instincts, his ability to break on the ball. That one play versus USF have been a highlight so far. Been helping on the versus FAU, being able to string out a run play, keep that run play toward the sideline for very little gain. There he's showed some good instincts knowing what to do there in that star position so far. And Jeremiah Moon, I mean, lining up all over the place, right over an offensive lineman, going to play the edge that we've seen him play for the last couple of years, but also that inside linebacker role. Nice twist there for the staff to find that. And he's played pretty good there. Now, of course, the first big test for everybody this week is, you know, Alabama, but seeing a new position like Kim, seeing how he stacks up there, we'll get into it too. Ventrell Miller, Mullen said they'll find out more. I know, you know, you ask around, he'll be out for a little while. So maybe Jeremiah Moon being – look, of course, he's not Ventrell Miller playing inside linebacker, but he's been doing pretty good these first couple games. And I like the way the staff has found that role for him and moving him around a little bit. And he's been a difference maker in these first couple games.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Perkins is concerned, I think you can see flashes. I think you also see flashes of inconsistency as well. Mm-hmm. There, especially on some third downs where they were playing a zone sort of at the sticks. There were a couple of times where he dropped behind the sticks, particularly in the FAU game. And then obviously had the late hit out of bounds that prolonged a drive as well that you want to eliminate. But a lot of good flashes too. And that's one of the things you're looking for at that position is a guy who's physical, a guy who can come up and help in the run game, but then a guy who's able and quick enough to then guard, guard bigger receivers and receivers who are going to come into the slot. Going to need that this weekend, right? I mean, Billingsley is a good player. Alabama has a lot of good players who are going to be out there at the receiver position or at the tight end position, and that star is going to be an important part of it. As far as Jeremiah Moon is concerned, yeah, I mean, middle linebacker, there are multiple times where you've seen him sort of fill a hole and take on the blocker who's coming through the hole and muddle things up to allow other guys to come in and finish off the play. And on the stat sheet, that doesn't show up as a tackle, but his ability to stand in there and his willingness to stand in there and take on either the pulling guard or a tight end who's pulling around and make sure that he takes him on directly and doesn't give the running back anywhere to go and allow his teammates time to catch up is a big part of being a middle linebacker. Something David Reese was always really, really good at. Reese made a ton of tackles as well, but he was never shy about taking on that offensive lineman who was pulling through the hole. And Moon's shown that as well. So, you know, kudos to him for being willing to jump into that role. And, you know, the other thing is that Alabama, interestingly, has not ran the ball all that well this year. They've averaged 3.9 yards per rush. They're not getting any rushing yards from their quarterback at all. Last year, they averaged 5 yards per rush. So this is a little bit different offense. I mean, they are, you know, 24th overall in yards per pass, 9.1 yards per pass, but 3.9 yards per rush. So, again, I sort of look at it and say, if there's, Florida has some things that I think they'll be able to do, even without Ventrell Miller on the defensive side of the ball, that are going to challenge Alabama. Now, we'll see if Alabama's up to the challenge, but, this is a different offense than last year's Tide for sure. And hopefully Florida's able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I also think we can say for all the good feelings we can have, maybe Florida being a little vanilla, maybe holding some things back. We'd say the same thing for Alabama, too. I mean, they got up so big on Miami to begin with. No need to really dive far into the playbook for them either. They played Mercer as well. So, you know, that's the thing about early season games. Well, you just don't know enough about these teams yet. You know, we can try and glean from what we see and try and go from the past and try and tie things together. But, you know, we'll know a whole lot more about Alabama and Florida week 3. in the game coming up this week. And you're going for Jeremiah Moon. I mean, lead the tackles there, Will. I mean, he's got 11 total tackles this season so far in two games, four of them being solo, seven assisted there. But, you know, total tackles there, you find Jeremiah Moon up at the top. Mamu Diabate, second on the team with 10. Bogle up there with 9. Hopper, 8. McDaniel with 8. Miller with 8. Shaw Torrance with 8, Bernie 7, Carter 7, Dean 7, Travis Johnson 7. So there's a kind of quick rundown of what number of tackles look like going into the Alabama game there. So some names you expected to see, some guys really you kind of racking up the stats there just because they're on the field late game situations that you won't necessarily see throughout the season there. So we'll extend in the injury conversation there. Zach Carter was asked about Ventrell Miller today and what Florida's defense would need to do if he can't play versus Alabama. He says he's a great guy, great teammate, great leader, but I feel like we shouldn't have an issue picking up that leadership role given experience across the defense. So good to hear there, of course. You know, now you see you got to put that to the test this week. You know, it's a lot easier to say those things about leadership till you get punched in the mouth and have to respond there, and that's exactly what's going to happen Saturday for Florida. They're going to have plenty of chances to respond there, but plenty of experience up front with Zachary Carter, I think, help leading those guys on the front seven. But also, Elijah Blaze nursing a hamstring, Will. He went out last week versus FAU, was seen in the tunnel just hanging out. I saw him on the sideline in street clothes versus USF this past week. And also, Gene DeLance, Mullen says it was a bruise. He was seen on crutches at some point in the USF game. Mullen says he would be back today or tomorrow practicing there. So a couple injury notes as we head into Alabama. We'll see if Blades can come back. And I think if this was the game I was actually pinpointing, Will, for Blades to kind of make – and I'm not going to sit here and say he was going to be some lockdown corner or go out there and, you know, have two interceptions in a game and return it for a touchdown. But the way and delayed, you know, him coming on campus, he was going to need some time to get acclimated into the defense. Bama's week three, I thought it might just time out to where, you know, this would be the game where he would be on the field a whole lot. Did play in game one a little bit. I thought it would take, you know, he's had some SEC experience. He's played versus Alabama before. This would be no surprise for him now playing against a big, you know, playing in a big SEC game like this. So this is the game I was pinpointing. Hopefully he's back, but I doubt he's practiced the last couple of weeks. So now still behind. In you know, getting up to speed with this Florida defense. And to Lance, and you know, we just talked about, you know, his improvement there with the run game, and he was instrumental in that speed option run by Emory Jones versus USF. Sealed the edge there to help launch Emory Jones into the end zone with I think a 30-yard touchdown run on that speed option. So hopefully he's back, create some depth up front for this Gator team. But Miller would be a loss, definitely a loss up there in the middle. I'd like to see him out there for some depth purposes there for linebacker. I haven't seen a whole lot from him. I still, you know, the linebackers still haven't really done anything to stand out in the first couple weeks, Will, in my opinion. But Miller, Blaze, DeLance, there's your injury list right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Blades injury is significant. We've seen both Avery Helm and Jason Marshall struggle a little bit on the outside. Having an extra option there would be a positive thing. There have been a lot of pass interference penalties on the outside. Even there was one play, I think, where it was Jason Marshall sort of, I thought it was going to be a pass interference, and the officials let it go in the game against USF this past week. Really not getting your head around in time when the ball's thrown up, the receiver stops, the DB runs into him, and all of a sudden you get a pass interference. There have been a couple of those in the first couple of weeks. A couple of times where the safeties weren't necessarily in the right position either, and I don't think that the DBs got the help that they thought they were going to get, and so it looked worse than it is. But certainly I think the second cornerback spot is a place where it would be nice to have some help from Blades. I think we're probably a little bit better off the linebacker position. Tyron Hopper has been okay. I don't know that he's been fantastic, but he's been okay when he's been in there. You've also got Diabate. You've got the ability to slide Moon in there, Amari Bernie. So you've got guys who have the ability and have some experience playing linebacker. But obviously last year, Alabama took advantage of Florida's linebackers in a lot of different ways in the game last year. But at the same time, it's really easy to do that when you got Najee Harris going for 7 yards every time he touches the ball. And I don't know that Alabama is going to have the ability to do that this year because of some of those guys up front. Desmond Watson has really been sort of, I think he might be able to steal a couple of series in this game, allow the rest of Florida's defensive tackles, you know, Antonio Valentino, Tyrone Truesdale, Daquan Newkirk, and Gervon Dexter, be able to give them the blow that they need a couple of times, especially when it seems like Alabama may really go to the run. And so, you know, that kind of helps out the linebackers as well. And last year, they just didn't have that. They didn't have anybody up front who could stop the linebackers, or who could stop the offensive linemen from getting to the linebackers. And then the linebackers were getting mauled. Now, Miller is the one guy at linebacker, maybe Moon as well, who have the ability to take on the offensive lineman who's coming around the edge. If you get an offensive lineman on Diabate, it's over, right? Like the run is going through.
Yeah, that was the one play Derek Tyson shared of the tight end for USF pulling. Here comes Diabate trying to fill the hole. I mean, he was aggressively attacking the hole and just gets stonewalled by the USF tight end.
Well, the reality is Diabate is not he's a speed linebacker. He's not a power linebacker. Ventrell Miller and Jeremiah Moon are strength linebackers, not speed linebackers, if you were going to characterize either of those guys. And so, again, depending upon how the game plays out and what Alabama's trying to do with its running backs, they might be able to take advantage of those guys. But I think linebackers probably – I'm less worried about linebacker than I am about defensive back, put it that way. The injury to Blades, even though Miller, I think, is a more valuable player to Florida over the course of the year, mm-hmm. I think that the drop-off from Miller to the next guy at linebacker might be less than the drop-off from Blades to the next guy at defensive back.
Yeah, give me Miller back by Kentucky. That would be the game I'd circle in a few weeks. I don't know the extent of the injury. I was told to expect him out for a little while, but maybe 3 weeks for Kentucky, we get him back there. But of course, Alabama this week, Tennessee next week. So some games in between there. Won't overlook the one that's happening this Saturday. So, all right, Will, man, that will do it for this episode. Can't wait to see you in person, not behind a computer screen on Saturday for the first time in a couple of years. Of course, I guess give us a tiny – what are you looking – I mean, we've kind of talked about it here just a little bit. Briefly, what are you looking for Saturday? You know, you can save some for your preview, of course, whatever, but maybe a little tease. What are you looking for Saturday?
So the biggest thing I'm looking for is how often is Alabama able to get into the backfield? So they have not been real good at getting into the backfield in the first two games. 9 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. That's 7% of their total tackles have gone for loss. Last year it was up around 10%, and 3% of their total, 3% of their sacks, or 3% of the total tackles, the ratio of sacks to total tackles. And last year it was up around 5%. So you start looking at those numbers and you say they're not getting in the backfield as often. And what does that mean for a team like Florida that's able to run the ball, right? Well, it means that hopefully you can get to the second level. You can get a guy like Malik Davis on a linebacker, on a safety one-on-one, or you get a guy like Emory Jones or Anthony Richardson on a linebacker, on a safety one-on-one. And we've already seen that those guys can win those battles. Last year, they didn't have the ability to do that. There was no ability to run the ball. They had to rely on Kyle Trask. And he was really sort of up to the task, but it took him a little while to get to the point where they felt confident. I think that they were able to take advantage of it. And so, you know, it's interesting. Last year, Florida fell behind 14-0 to Georgia and then came storming back. But it almost felt like they were a little bit deer in the headlights for the first 5 minutes against Georgia. I mean, the first play turns into a big long run for a touchdown. And all of a sudden they're down 14-0 and they're really struggling. And then they're able to turn it around. Last year sort of felt like they got hit in the mouth in the first half against Alabama. And then they were able to turn it around and at least get back and make it close. So maybe that's the thing we should be looking for, is that they come out fast, that they don't fall behind, 14-0, 17-0, 17-3, something like that. That Florida really probably needs to come out, make it 10-0, make it 17-0, 17-7, something like that, where the crowd is in it the whole game, because Florida's in it the whole game. And then you got Bryce Young on the offensive side of the ball for Alabama, this is his first road game, right? That game against Miami, that was not a hostile crowd there at that neutral site game. The game against Mercer, certainly not a hostile crowd. And now you've got a sold out Swamp jacked to see Florida be able to pull this one out. It's going to be as loud as anything you've ever heard in there. And Bryce Young hasn't dealt with that yet. And so you get, you know, I said what I said about Emory Jones at some point needing to make a play. It may be the same thing for Bryce Young, right? At some point, Alabama's going to have to rely on him to make a play. He's been able to do it and been more impressive in the first two games of the year, but it's really easy to let the ball fly when you're up 21-3 in the second quarter against Miami and there's no crowd. It's really hard to let it fly when and trust your instinct when you're down 21-17 in the fourth quarter in the Swamp. And so that, to me, those would be the two things. This is Alabama in the backfield consistently. And if they are, then it's going to be a really long day for Florida because obviously they need to run the ball. And then the other thing would be, does Florida come out and sort of look tentative to start with like they did against Georgia last year, like they did against, quite honestly, LSU last year, and like they did against Alabama? Or do they come out and are they the aggressors and do they punch Alabama in the mouth? And I don't know that they're going to win if you see those two things happen, but I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be close if you see those two things happen.
Yeah, that's my big thing. Keeping it close to keep the crowd in it. That's before I give my preview on Wednesday as well. That is definitely one of mine as well. Getting off to a better start on defense. I don't expect the offense to go out there and go crazy. I think the defense has got to do its job and keeping it close to the offense finds their way. So, all right, plenty of previews, both sides. Read and reaction, that's where you can find Will and his work there. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. Anything else, Will?
Dude, I went to work today and I was just like, can it be the weekend? Yep. Like, can we get there? This is one of those where you're just like, is it Saturday yet? Is it Saturday yet? Is it Saturday? And I feel like I'm the kid at Christmas. Like, this is my kids, like the week leading up to Christmas. That's what I feel like right now, you know, and it's interesting. There was a really interesting article on Sports Illustrated today talking about the hiring of Dan Mullen and why they didn't hire Scott Frost and sort of the saga with Chip Kelly and all that sort of stuff. And it just sort of made me think back in 2017, what would I have thought with Alabama coming to the Swamp? I would have been like, oh. And really, to be honest, even in 15 and 16, when we played him in the SEC championship game, I didn't think we had a chance. Last year, I thought we had a chance, but that it was extraordinarily remote. This year, I think we have a chance, and it's more than just remote. I think we're obviously underdogs, but I think it's pretty ridiculous that they're more than two touchdown favorites in the Swamp. I think, you know, that's a lot of points for a team with a lot of question marks. And granted, Alabama's always one of these reloads and that sort of stuff. But I don't know. I think Florida's going to be able to keep it close, and I'm going to be there cheering them on. So come by and see us. We'd love to sort of interact with all the people that we talk to through the computers every week and, meet them in person as well.
Absolutely. Once again, Will Miles, you can find him at readreaction.com and on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.